Hello and welcome to another edition of Cross-Court Conversations. As the sun begins to descend later and later with each passing day, the beautiful clay courts of Monte Carlo, Madrid, and Rome will all be shining for the next 2 months as tennis moves from the US back to Europe for three massive Masters 1000 tournaments. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host Jason. Jason, match is finally starting at a more regular time. How are you feeling today?
I'm good, man. I've finally started watching a bit more tennis now. I gotta be honest, though, first few rounds of Monte Carlo, I've been a busy boy. But today, I sat down, I watched some Carlos Alcaraz, I watched Jack Draper lose. So I'm heading back into it. I'm gonna watch the quarters tomorrow. I don't really have an excuse not to. So yeah, and I was already, when I was watching the game today, I was like, I've missed the clay, I've missed the sunshine, I've missed the European court. You know, it's the American courts, like you said, you're sick of hard courts. I'm sick of American hard courts specifically. So yeah, it's good to be back, and hopefully even this week I can bring a bit more nuance, a bit more energy to my takes, a bit more heat to my takes, if you will, as well. So we'll see what we can do in this clay court season preview. So yeah, but we've got something else to get us started, don't we?
Yeah, well, you know, in the spirit of Monaco, as you all know by now, our listeners, we like to hit you with a little bit of something different as alongside tennis. And today we decided we're in Monaco. What is there in Monaco other than the famous Formula One race and the famous tennis tournament and all these rich people? A bunch of casinos.
Casinos, right? Baby. And gambling. I mean, we're not outwardly gamblers. I don't think you or I either gamble. I want to preface that. We're not promoting gambling in any way. But in the spirit of gambling, we're as our extra segment today, we're gonna do, if you had the ability to go back in time, what are the top three sports bets that you would put down to try and get the biggest bang for your buck? Or maybe it's not completely money related, maybe there's just a sporting upset, because let's face it, these are all going to be upsets.
I mean, my thinking was, I'm going to make these bets and make so much money that I never have to work again, because that is the level of sport betting that, I mean, if you start gambling, which, you know, I'm not promoting, but if you do, like, you really only do it to make a shit ton of money. I'm not a 20 cent for €2.50 back kind of guy. I'm more like a €5 for a 1,250 euro parlay kind of guy, you know?
Exactly.
Like, I gamble once a month only when there's UFC pay-per-views. That's the only time that I gamble. I've only won one time, but, you know, I got to keep digging. I'm going to find that gold again, man.
Exactly.
I'm going to find it again.
I mean, recently I've downloaded the new FIFA, or it's not new at this stage, it's old, but I was able to get it for 20.
And it's also not FIFA, it's EAFC.
Sorry, you are 100% correct. But that's kind of got my slot machine brain going a little bit, because it's just, you're opening packs and you've got all these bright colors, and I'm like, God, the casino is calling me. And then I'm watching tennis in Monte Carlo and I'm like, God damn, I'd like to pull the lever at the slot machine 300,000 times for my 50 cents that I get back. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this little segment, but let's get into it. Have you ordered yours as in a top three?
I did. So I've gone from, I'm going to start from three. So the bet, and then to number one, which I think would have made me the most money. Maybe not, but I think number one is what I would definitely go. But let's kick it off, number three. So I'm taking our time machine that we've created, and I'm going back to 1919. And I'm going specifically to the Saratoga race course.
What did you bet?
Why is that?
Did you bet on the outcome of World War One? Like, what have you done? That's not sport, bro.
The odds were,
that's some fucked up
the
sport
odds
right
for
there.
The Allies. The odds for the Allies were at like +250 to win. So I put all my savings into them. No, so we're going back to 1919. We're going to the Saratoga race course for the only time that the legendary racehorse Manowar lost in his career. And he lost to a horse very, very appropriately named Upset. And that is the only time Manowar ever lost. Nobody expected Manowar to lose. So I would go back there. I'm putting all of my... And plus, like, you know, the dollar bills were about, what, the size of, like, an A4 paper? I'm putting, like, three of those $1 bills. Probably worth, what, like, $3 million today or something. And then I'm running away. Although, I guess, I didn't think about the fact that I make a shit ton of money and then the war is in the middle of it and then a Great Depression. But, like, you know, at least at the time when I watch Upset win that race, I'm telling everybody I told you so.
Yeah, because that's a bit of a weird one, right? Because you can't go back to 1919 with 10 grand and put it all on, because 10 grand would buy you like half a city back then. So you couldn't go back. Yeah. You couldn't go back with 10 grand. So you'd have to go back with like $5, make it into 5,000, and then, I don't know, put it in the stock market or something. But then that wouldn't work because, well, it's a Great Depression and all this stock crap.
Yeah, like but, 10
but we're
years
getting a little
after.
We're getting a little too technical there.
Yeah, but that would be my number three. I'm going back and I'm picking Upset to beat Manowar in that race. And they say that that is where the term Upset came from. Apparently it's been disproven, but that is sort of like the lore behind this horse, is that he is the reason, or she. I have no idea if horses...
Aren't all horse
like
races
what gender
mean?
They have to be to race. Yeah, I guess.
Wait,
so.
No.
Right? I think so.
I don't know. I don't know.
Was Secretariat a female horse or a male horse?
We're going to have to look at this after. But
Yeah. But it doesn't matter. Either way, I'm putting all my money on Upset. Let's go. What's your number three?
My number three is Mark Edmondson winning. This is actually tennis, believe it or not.
Oh, okay.
Mark Edmondson winning the 1976 Australian Open. He was ranked 212th in the world and remains the lowest ranked player ever to win a Grand Slam. And to do it, he beat 8-time Grand Slam champion at the time, Ken Rosewell, in the final. He had already won 4 Australian Opens at that point. So yeah, just a crazy, crazy upset. No one saw it coming. Still to this day, the lowest ranked ever player to win a Grand Slam. So in terms of tennis, in terms of a lot of sports, I think that's a pretty crazy upset.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't get any betting odds, though. That's with two of my picks. I couldn't find any actual betting odds.
No, same. I also couldn't for my Manowar pick. I don't know what the betting odds were, but I assume the Peaky Blinders were cooking something up behind the scenes there. Like,
but I think maybe he reached number 20-something in the world, but he essentially never won anything else after this either. So he won 1976 Australian Open out of nowhere and then completely disappeared. I rate it.
I also don't know if what I'm about to say is true, but I think he might be the last Australian man to win the Australian Open title.
Yeah, Mark Edmondson, 1976 Australian Open champion from 212th in the world. I don't know how much money I would have made on that, but my guess is a fair bit if I would have picked him as the pre-tournament favorite. But anyway, let's move on. What have you got at number two?
So at number two, I've also picked not an Australian, but a number of Australians. And that is when the Australia 2 yacht defeated the America or USA team, the Liberty boat, in the 1983 America's Cup. And if you're not aware of what the America's Cup is this... basically a yacht race between some of the biggest yacht clubs in the world. And in 1983, this competition had been going on for 132 years, and the USA had never lost the competition. They had never lost the America's Cup. They were the best team. The New York Yacht Club had the best team. They were untouchable. And then little Australia came, and for the first time ever, they were down 3-1 in the final as well, which was like a sort of insane comeback. You play a best out of 7 races, and then they were down 3-1. Nobody had ever come back from 3-1. Australia comes back, wins the America's Cup for the first time in history, and for the first time ever, the USA did not win the America's Cup. So I think that if you bet prior to the tournament, I think it would have made so much money.
I mean, speaking of America's Cup, I mean, New Zealand has a great history in the America's Cup now because it's not just an American competition anymore. New Zealand, I believe they are the current holders at the moment, but I think
so too, because I looked that up and I'm pretty sure you guys have won it like 5 or 6 times even. Like.
I think it actually happened earlier this year. It was in Barcelona, but I think we won.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, I think maybe 2 or 3 America's Cups ago, when I was still in high school, it was a really big deal because it was in New Zealand, I think, as well. And
yeah, because usually the winning country then hosts the next
edition. Get to choose where they want it. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
So in this particular instance, I think they changed it as well. So now you play like, you might play first to 10 or you play, there's a lot more races or first and I don't know exactly, but the New Zealand team was up 7 or we had match point essentially, and they had one race win. And what happened was, so this is where you could throw down a bet on the American team to win, because we were smoking them every race. And long story short, they flew in this New Zealander who makes the boats, and he's very good at the boat stuff. He's kind of like the Adrian Newey of the boating world. And he did some magic to their boat overnight, and then they won every single race from then on out, and we lost match point in the America's Cup the entire time. And I remember it was such a big deal at the time, because it would be the first time in a little while that we had won it. They were showing the race on the projector in the auditorium at my school, and a desperate scene that was. All these kids packed into an auditorium, and there was just, because a lot of these sailing races, it's like, it's not down to the wire. Quite often they'll build out a lead, and then it's like, well, the only way we win from here is if the boat capsizes, and it didn't. So, you know, they just kind of sailed through to the end and they won. It was quite depressing. Yeah.
What I'm getting from this is basically that yacht racing is insane, and maybe it's our next venture.
I got to say, man, I have watched a little bit of the America's Cup in the past, and it's kind of awesome. The boats that they use nowadays, absolutely insane.
The boats are crazy. The boats are insane. If you have now been enticed by our America's Cup talk, there is a Netflix documentary called Untold, The Race of the Century, that specifically covers the bet that I'm talking about. It's amazing. It's amazing. And that's basically why Australia won, because they brought this like whiz kid engineer, and the guy had no formal training. He was just a boat expert. Like, he just knew boats. He had no engineering, no nothing. And he built this crazy like wing underneath the boat that made it way faster than any other boat. And they covered, you know what? I'm getting too much into it.
We are a tennis podcast after all. But yeah, you're 100% right. It's very much like Formula One in that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But let's move on.
The engineer really makes a difference.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, a lot of engineering goes into those boats. So my number two, I think we're going to speed it up a little bit because we've been going for a little while already. I'm going with the 1969 New York Mets, who won the World Series.
The Miracle
the
Mets.
The Miracle Mets.
The Miracle
you
Mets.
You know, how can you not pick a team that got the name the Miracle Mets after winning this season, this World Series? Prior to this 1969 series, they had not placed higher than 9th, which at that time was second to last in the MLB.
Jesus Christ.
And did not win more than 73 games. And I know what you're thinking, 73 games is a lot, but they played like 160 games a season or something.
They still do. I think like a good year is if you go like 105 and 40 or some shit like that.
It's absolutely ridiculous. But anyway, they made it all the way to the World Series. And they defeated the Baltimore Orioles in the final 4-1, who were considered to be one of the best teams of that era. And even though their records were actually kind of similar, the New York Mets were still considered to be the way lesser team. But I think if you're putting a bet down at the start before the Major League Baseball season kicks off, I think you're looking at like similar odds for what I have for my number one pick, which is like 5,000 to 1. So you're making good money there. Big up the Miracle Mets. That's my number two. What have you got at number one?
So for my number one, I have also decided to go with a sort of America-based upset. And I have gone for when Buster Douglas knocked out Mike Tyson in Japan. Because this is genuinely seen as the biggest sporting upset maybe of all time. Like Buster Douglas was, he was supposed to be another can that Tyson crushed. And if, like, I also was not alive during that time, but I am a huge boxing fan. And the aura that Mike Tyson had at this time was that he was unbeatable. He was untouchable. Mm-hmm. Nobody can go against our Mike Tyson. And of course, the stories are that he wasn't taking it seriously. The amount of pictures and videos there are of him like walking out of strip clubs at like 5 a.m. and he's got the fight in like 2 days, you know, so he really didn't care. But Buster Douglas was literally a nobody. He was a 42-1 underdog, which meant like $1, you make $42 back. Like, they insane odds. And Buster Douglas knocked him out and he became the world champion. And to this day...
Did he defend the belt at all?
I think he had... I don't think he did. And actually, like, it's a mythical performance because Douglas... It wasn't that Tyson fought bad, which he did, but Buster Douglas maybe, like, he became the greatest boxer ever because he also had lost a family member very close to the fight. And the reason I say family member because I'm not sure if it was his mom or his dad, but it was somebody very close to him who passed away in the build-up to it. And apparently, like, the guy basically made it his mission, like, I'm going to be the world champion for this person. And then he knocked him out. And it's still to this day, like, you can't mention upsets without mentioning this upset. You know, it's like one of the first one that comes up to mind. So if I went back, bet on Buster Douglas to make some money, people would laugh at me. And then I'd laugh at them with my millions.
Fair enough. That's, I mean, in 42-1 in boxing, especially heavyweight boxing, is crazy because those guys, I mean, you always run the risk of getting knocked out when you're a heavyweight boxer. So
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You get punched once, even if you're the best, even if you're Muhammad Ali, you get punched once, you get knocked out. Like, it could happen. Mm-hmm. So what do you have at one? Do you, I'm pretty sure I have an idea, but, and I'm also sure that you would make way more money than I would on Buster Douglas, but
this one's a moneymaker right here. Number one, I have, in my opinion, the greatest sporting story of all time, or the greatest sporting upset of all time. It's the 2015-16 Leicester City Premier League win. So to put this in perspective, the previous season they had been dead last in the Premier League from November through to April and seemed destined to be relegated. They ended the season winning 7 of their last 9. A bit of a sign of things to come. Then in the 2015-16 season, they had 5,000-1. 5,000-1 odds.
Oh, that makes 42-1 look like child money, man.
5,000-1. And they did it. They won. And I think it's the greatest sporting story of all time. It's something that we will probably never see in our lifetime again. And Leicester City have since been relegated and moved back up to the Premier League. But it just goes to show how small and this club was.
And we'll get relegated this year too. Yeah. We'll probably get relegated this year too. Mm. Like, that's how insane it was. I think everybody, unless you hate Leicester City... And we both support teams that play in England. Yep. Like, you support Manchester United, I support Manchester City, and I was actively rooting for Leicester to win the league.
Didn't,
like,
City come second?
I wanted them to win it so bad.
Oh, no, it was Spurs, wasn't it? Oh, no, Spurs finished third because they capitulated at the end.
You know who finished second? You know Arsenal. Who finished second? The always bridesmaid Arsenal.
Okay. That concludes our little Monte Carlo gamblers segment. So let's move on to the good stuff. A little clay court little clay court preview, if you will.
Preview predictions, yeah.
Get our hands dirty in some clay, if you will.
30.
Alrighty, so we're going to start talking a little bit about the ATP clay court season that is upcoming and has already started. Obviously, the women's haven't hit the clay courts yet, as far as I'm concerned. I believe in Stuttgart is the first, not a 1,000, but it's a 500.
Yeah, I think because right now there's a Billie Jean King Cup qualifiers all over the world. In fact, also in The Hague, which we probably should have checked. Maybe we could have gone to watch, but anyways, that's not really what's important here. Let's talk some ATP tennis, some clay. Yeah. What have you been seeing? What do you think is something that is going to come up? any hot takes, any cold takes, maybe. I don't know.
All right. Well, first thing I want to touch on, I think, is kind of someone who we're not going to be talking about, and that's Rafael Nadal. Because I think for the first time, the first time since we've watched tennis in our infancy, pretty much, this guy is not here for a clay court season. And even last year, when he was arguably way past his best, the conversation was all about how's his body doing. And every year, probably for the last 5 years, that's been the conversation, is leading up to the clay court season, is how's Rafa's body looking? Is it going to hold up for the season? But this year, there's a massive void, and we don't have Rafa to talk about at all. And just to give an idea of the void that he's left, 14 titles at Roland Garros, a 112-3 win-loss record at Roland Garros. That's the equivalent of 97.4%. Won four of those titles without dropping a set. Like, without this guy, the clay court season is just not the same. But that brings me in to my next talking point, which I think that this clay court season for the men could be one of the most open clay court seasons that we have had in a very long time.
I like that. I like that, and I agree with it, because I think the fact that Jannik Sinner is going to come into clay late into the process, you know, because of course we said, like, we have these 1000s, but there's also other tournaments, like you mentioned Barcelona. Like, there is a lot of clay tournaments that these guys can get used to playing on clay, up until the Italian Open, which is really the last tournament before the French. So I think without Sinner here to consistently improve and basically do what he does, which is, like, I mean, show up to any tournament, but then just get better as he continues playing on something. So I completely agree. It's super open. I think even just the guys that have been playing well in Monte Carlo have surprised me, as well as the guys who haven't played well, has also surprised me that they haven't played well. So I think that that's really spot on, to be honest, as to what the clay season is going to look like. And I dare say, maybe a little bit more fun than just expecting Rafa to, like, run through clay and win everything, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think as well, you have to definitely look, you can't look to Djokovic either at this point, because he's already lost in Monte Carlo. He lost to Bilo in straight sets yesterday.
And I watched that game. Just a little aside on Djokovic. We don't have to talk about him every episode, and yet we always do, because, like, it's impossible to not do. I genuinely think this guy needs to, like, just take off the rest and come back for the French Open. He does not want to play tennis. Like, it's not that he's washed or he's old. Like, he looked genuinely like he did not want to play yesterday at all. There wasn't a second in there that I was like, oh, he's not enjoying himself, like, at all. Like, I don't know why. You've already done everything. What are you doing? Just chill out for a bit.
But do you think going for Grand Slam number 5 is just going to... number 25 is going to bring out that dog in him? How could it not?
I don't know. How could it not, right? I think also, in my opinion, the only thing that is in his head right now is Slam number 25 and title 100. I honestly wouldn't be so shocked if he somehow wins the French Open, which I don't think he will, and we're not even there yet, but I don't think he will. I think he could easily retire right there.
I had this thought earlier today, as I was going to bring it up, is that he could retire this year, because you can't deny that he's just not... at this point, you're really looking at his decline, and unless it's something very Djokovic-esque, you know, we've seen him more in terms of how he plays his matches, where he can sometimes go through periods, and you're looking at him and you're like, this guy does not want to be here, but then he'll turn into Novak Djokovic that we know, and he just won't miss a ball. So maybe we get that Novak for the rest of the year. You just don't know. I mean, the guy did make the semifinals in the Australian Open, you know, and
a final in Miami too.
Yeah, and, like, still beat the best in the world doing it. So, like we've said multiple times, let's not write him off at all. But it's really tough to visualize him doing anything.
I think I'm not gonna write him off, but I'm definitely getting the pen wet. You know what I mean? Like, I'm starting to ink that pen, because to lose to, fair enough, he lost to Tavilo last year in Rome as well, so, like, maybe it's a matchup problem. But Tavilo, up until yesterday when he played Djokovic, had won 3 matches all year. He won 1 at Indian Wells, 1 in Miami, and the round prior to playing Djokovic in Monte Carlo. Like, This is not, I mean, first of all, this is not a guy Djokovic should lose to, period. But this is not a guy who was in good form either. Like, it's not like he was coming off like, oh, he had a great run or like, or this, or he's been doing really well. Like, if he would have lost to somebody, say, like Alejandro Davidovich Fokina, who won today against Jack Draper, but he's been having a good year. So even though the name is obviously like, oh, Djokovic should spank this guy. Like Tabilo, he should spank him on name and he should spank him on form alone. Tabilo's had a terrible year.
Yeah. I mean, and on Davidovich Fokina, while you've mentioned his name, I'm putting him down as my dark horse for the clay court season because I think his game is a little bit suited to a clay court. He's not the biggest guy, he's not a big server. He's had an amazing year so far. He made the fourth round in Aussie. He reached the final in Del Rey and Acapulco. No wins, though. I think we were talking before the podcast, and you said he is a bit of a choker. But just the form that he's shown this year has been super impressive. So I want to put him down as a bit of a dark horse. He is actually 10th in the live race rankings at the moment.
You're kidding.
He is 10th, yeah.
No way. Oh, my God, man. Okay, I have a little bit of a Homer situation with Davidovich Fokina. He lives like 10 minutes away from where my parents live, so I always like this guy. And honestly, I watched his game today against Draper. I totally agree with you. Like, this is a guy who... And he's playing Alexei Popyrin tomorrow, so he could definitely make the semis in Monte Carlo. And he's even made a final in Monte Carlo in 2022. Yeah. So... Clearly, the clay suits him, and I think his best quality is his backhand and his speed. Mm. He's so fast. Like, he gets to every little drop shot Draper was playing. He was making it no problem. Like, he's a really nice player to watch. And speaking of dark horses, I'm going to give you mine right now. I think he's better known than Davidovich Fokina, but my dark horse is Artur Fields.
Artur Fields, okay.
Who did you think I was going to say?
See, my other, after a performance that he had today, but then it's against someone, I was going to say maybe Di Minaur. Maybe this is his time.
Right?
Because yeah. I'm looking, I think the question we have to ask ourselves here, I've just said that it could be one of the most open clay court seasons that we've seen in a long time. So I think we have to ask ourselves, who's going to step into that void? And I think, you know, we have clay court specialists, Casper Ruud, Stefanos Tsitsipas, but I can't see either of them doing it, especially because Casper Ruud lost today. So,
and he lost to a guy who he should not be.
Alexei Popyrin.
He didn't lose to a Davidovich Fokina. He lost to Alexei,
who is also in a terrible run of form. So,
you know.
But yeah, tell me why Arthur Fields.
I just think that it's so weird because this guy's so young and he's so good and nobody cares. Mm. Like, nobody talks about Artur Fields the way we talk about other youngsters. And I don't get it because he's not even Czech. Like, you know, the Czech guys are the guys that always get like swept under the rug. Like, this guy is French. He has a beautiful game. Maybe that's but why, when, because he's French, people don't like
because
it.
Because when was the last time we had a French male Grand Slam winner?
Oof.
You're going back a long way.
I mean, my guess would be Yannick Noah in like 1984 when he won the French Open. I think
he's the last one to win the French Open, isn't he?
As well, right? The last French guy to... Yeah, so I think... he's also the only man to make every quarterfinal of every 1,000 so far this year after his victory today against Rublev. And the game against Rublev, holy, that guy was on fire today. I think the clay really suits his game style, especially Monte Carlo is so slow, so he can just blast that forehand. He's a great athlete. He can move around really well. I don't think maybe he doesn't get as much pop because there's nothing he really does that I think is too flashy. You know, he's just a very safe, very good tennis player. But I'm giving it to you right now. He's my pick to win Monte Carlo. I think he will beat Alcaraz tomorrow. He's playing Alcaraz tomorrow. I think he's going to beat him because that's how good I think he's played.
I think that's it's a fair bet. I watched Alcaraz today. He started quite shaky, but then ended up coming through.
And he did that against Cerundolo too, which, you know, he lost the first set 6-3 and then he won 6-love 6-1. But I think against a player like Artur Fields, he can just take the game away from you in a way that Cerundolo or Daniel Altmaier can't do that to Alcaraz. And I think that in terms of athleticism, of like reaching balls, making everything back, I don't think Fields is that far away from Alcaraz in that sort of freak athlete sort of way. Mm. So I wouldn't be surprised. And I'm picking him to beat Alcaraz tomorrow.
It's a big call.
yeah, this is totally gonna age terribly when Alcaraz wins like all three 1000s and the French Open.
Yeah, obviously we talk about Alcaraz a lot, so I don't think we need to say too much here. But pretty much the gist of it is we haven't seen the form from him that he needs, I think. But this could all go wrong because we could be eating our words in a couple months. Because to be honest, looking at who's there, unless Sinner comes out in the form, like the same form that we saw in the Australian, because I think if Sinner comes out with the same form in the Australian, I know it's Clay now, but I reckon just give him the trophy, you know?
I completely agree with you. Like, if you ask me today, gun to my head, who do you think is going to win the French Open? I'm going to tell you Yannick Sinner. And he hasn't even touched a racket in 3 months.
I would go Carlos Alcaraz. For some reason, I just have a feeling that he's going to pull it all together. He's going to find form in this clay season. Because I don't see anyone else who is going to fill that void. Zverev has fallen off the biggest cliff. He lost to Berrettini the other day. Really good game. I don't know if you saw the 48-shot rally that they had.
Insane. And it was towards the end as well, right? Deuce, it was so tight.
Deuce 5-all or something like that? Yeah.
Something like that. And Berrettini broke him in that game and then served it out, right? I think it was towards there. Man, the tension, even the crowd. Yeah. Every ball that was going back, you could feel the crowd was like, Like, that was a great match.
Yeah, I don't know how he's going to recover his form. You know, he hasn't made it past the fourth round of any of the 1000s this year. And now he's racked up 2 second round exits as well. So, you know, I just don't.
Which is basically first round for him because he gets the bye in the first, right? So he's basically lost in the first round, or at least his first game, match in the last two. Yeah, and he's never been good in Monte Carlo because it's so slow that it completely neutralizes his serve. And Berrettini is a tough draw for your first match. Like, you know, he didn't get some scrub, but still, he's technically the world number one, you know? Like, and the levels he's shown is so far away from it.
Yeah.
I don't back him to repeat his title win in Italy either. Like, he won the 1000 in Rome last year. I'm not picking him to win that.
No, apart from the Australian Open final, he has not shown the form that he did throughout last year. So, yeah. I don't know that I have too much else to add. Do you have anything in terms of predictions or insights?
No, I'll give you quick, like, I'll just do quick fire predictions. Like, as I said, Monte Carlo, I'm going Arthur Fields. For Madrid, I'm going with Carlos. I think being back home, a tournament he's already won twice, if I'm not wrong. Yeah, I think he has won it twice. And last year when he played in Madrid, he was coming back from injury, so his forehand wasn't all there. I think now if he can get some momentum here in Monte Carlo, I think he's going to go to Madrid and win it. And then Italian Open. Oh, I really want to pick Sinner, but I think I'm going to do something stupid, and I'm going to pick Novak Djokovic to win it.
Okay. I'm going to go with... I know I talk so much shit about him, but there's been a lot of randomness in this tournament so far, and I just feel it's lining up for him. I think Stefanos Tsitsipas is going to get his one win of the season.
Let's go, man. Come on. Keep getting your 1,000 at Monte Carlo, my Monte Carlo king.
And then Madrid, I agree with you. I think Carlos is going to get that one. And then Rome...
It's hard to not pick Sinner, man. Like, I can't... Like, I pick Novak because I feel like I'm dumb to pick Sinner. Because he's just coming back then. But, yeah, right?
Can I go crazy? Go Casper Ruud?
Oh, maybe, man. I was tempted to pick him as well for Rome. Yeah. Like...
You know what? I'm going to stick to my guns. And I said Carlos Alcaraz was going to build up form. I'm going to go Carlos Alcaraz again.
Damn, dirty double from Carlos. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That would be crazy. Yeah. I would like it. I would like that. I would like that for him. But yeah, I think if that is it, then it's time to move on to our WTA clay season preview.
Let's do it.
And now, welcome back for our final segment. We are talking the women's tour, the WTA on clay this year. Of course, they do not have the three 1000s, but they still have Madrid and Rome, along with other, like you said, Stuttgart, other tournaments that the top players are going to be competing in. I mean, every clay conversation on the WTA tour has to start and end with one woman, Iga Świątek. thoughts on her heading into the clay season?
Yeah, so I mean, my thoughts on the clay season here for the WTA are kind of similar to the men's. I think it's gonna. This is everyone else's best chance to win a Roland Garros the French Open this year.
Damn.
Since Iga has started her reign, you know. Because
yeah, since Iga has done the Nadal thing of like she just wins it every year.
Yeah, she's on treble. She's going for the quad now. But yeah, her form has not been there, and I think this is make or break for her. I think if she loses this year, it could be really detrimental for her career, and it would be a long way back for her to regain her form. So yeah, just going through. Obviously, she hasn't won a tournament since last year's French Open. Two losses to Andreeva this year, and then a loss in Miami to Ayala from the Philippines. So this has to be, for her, her thinking has to be like, this has to be my way to get back on track. And honestly, I still back her to do it.
Do you still back her to do what she did last year, though, which is win Madrid, Rome, and the French Open?
Madrid she loses, Rome she wins, French Open she wins.
Okay, that's interesting because I have it exactly the same as you. I think that she will also lose Madrid to Sabalenka, who's won Madrid before and is, I think, the fastest of the hard courts, of the clay courts, sorry. Mm-hmm. And it just suits her game. But I do think, like, once you slow things down, like, I don't know, it's so hard. As we also talked about this, she hasn't had a bad year. She's just not had an Iga Świątek type of year. Mm-hmm. So we all say like, oh, she's not doing well. But actually all her results are very good. And being back on clay, I can't pick against her to not win both Italy and the French Open. Although I would say if she's losing one of those, I think she might lose the French Open.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Over Italy. Because I think that we've never seen Iga have so much pressure behind her. I think she, of course she always does have pressure. She was world number one, like racking up titles, like, but to the level of pressure that she herself is putting on herself of like not going to play the Billie Jean King Cup. Cause she's like, I need to go practice. Just, you know, all her interviews are really negative and she's not really an optimistic person to begin with. But like, I think you're absolutely right to say that if things don't go her way, like this could be so detrimental to her career. And I saw that if she doesn't defend her points, then she could almost be outside the top 10, depending on where she loses. Yeah, because that's how many points she's defending, because she basically has no points to defend after the French Open.
You mean like if she loses first round in all three tournaments or something?
Like if she loses in the first, like it won't happen, right? But let's say that for some reason she can't make it past like round three of any of these. Like she'll definitely be like in the top seven, top eight, which is crazy because I never would have thought that she would fall off anywhere other than one or two.
Yeah, but I mean, here we're talking a massive hypothetical. Like I think I would be shocked if she didn't win at least one of these tournaments, you know? So if we're seeing...
It would be insane.
Yeah, if we're seeing her outside the top 10, something's gone drastically wrong. But I think that's just such a... I mean, it's very easy to look at it and be like, oh, yeah, if she doesn't win... Because she obviously she is defending a lot of points. But yeah, it's not like...
She's not going to lose 1,000 every time. Like she's not going to lose first round every time.
No, I think that's a way far off possibility. But when you look at the WTA clay season, you're always thinking, who's the biggest prospect outside of Iga? Obviously, you have Sabalenka, but where do you rank in terms of the biggest chance to beat Iga on clay? Do you have Mira Andreeva on top, or do you have Sabalenka on top?
That's crazy, because those are the only two people right now that I have faith to beat her on clay. Because I was going to put Coco in there, but she's been so inconsistent that, like, I don't know. I just feel like her game looks so like it would suit clay. Outside of, like, she has a... When the serve is firing, her serve is good, but it's just, like... But that doesn't really matter on clay. But just, like, her attributes seem to fit clay so much. I can't believe that she... I mean, she's made a French Open final, but I can't believe that she hasn't been able to, like, back that. But between Sabalenka and Andreeva... I mean, I would pick Sabalenka. Like, my mind tells me Sabalenka, but my heart really wants to say Andreeva, because it would be so crazy if Andreeva is the one to be like, oh, I just won the French Open, you know? Like, that would be so sick. But I think, realistically, Sabalenka, who has won 1,000s on clay, has made French Open semifinals. I guess so has Andreeva, to be fair, but... I think her resume and her form. Yeah, but Andreeva's also on crazy form. But I would say Sabalenka.
Yeah, so Andreeva is number three in the live race. So that's an indication of her form.
One is Sabalenka and two is Iga? Two is still Iga or no?
She's four.
No.
Who do you think's number two?
Oh, it's two Madison Keys.
Two is Madison Keys, yeah.
Yeah, which just shows you like how... Because she really only had... Oh, well, I guess she made semis of Indian Wells as well. And she won two titles this year, so...
I don't know. I think I probably agree with you that Sabalenka is still the better shout out of those two. But yeah, Mira Andreeva, you know, she's arguably the most informed player this entire season in terms of consistency. She started off with a career-best Grand Slam result semifinal in Australia and backed it up with two Masters 1000 wins. And she, yeah, like I said, she's third in the race. She's also a good matchup against Iga. And before she had that Australian Open result, her best Slam result was a quarterfinal at the French Open. Her clay court play is good. So if she can bring what she's brought to the last couple 1,000 tournaments and the Australian Open, I guess I think you got to give her every chance.
I don't see why not. I don't see why not. Like, I think it's between those three to, I guess you could say, dominate the clay season. Although between three players and you only have like three tournaments, like what? There's no domination there really. Like, it's just, but I really want to bring in another name here. And she hasn't been having a good year.
Let me guess.
Who's it going to be?
Ken Win.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know why.
Because I've got her hair as well. Oh, so you think she's going to do something?
I think that, like, I was actually going to pick her to win Madrid even. And then I thought, like, nah, I can't do that. Mm. I can't do that. Because she is in such terrible form. Terrible form. But then that's where her strengths lie on clay. Mm. Like, I think her first two career titles, if I'm not wrong, were Palermo, which is a clay tournament. She's also a Rafa Nadal Academy graduate. So obviously, like, basically lived on the clay. She won the Olympics last year on clay. Mm. I don't know. I have a feeling she could. Maybe she just needed to get out of the hard courts for a bit. And now she can find her feet. I don't think China is playing Billie Jean King Cup qualifiers, if I'm not wrong. So that also gives her time off now to just kind of like go straight into clay. So I think she could definitely do something here. Okay. And then how about, you know, somebody we haven't mentioned at all. Like, what do you think of the odds for French Open runner-up Jasmine Paolini and Olympic silver medalist Donna Vekic, who both had good clay years last year?
I don't think they're going to feature, to be honest. I just haven't seen enough from especially Donna Vekic. She's been pretty much down and out. I think we can maybe already say that there was a bit of a, you know, flash in the pan. Paolini could put together maybe like a quarterfinal run or something, but I don't see her challenging the big guns. But I want to jump back to Kim Nguyen as well. I was under the impression that her best surface was hard court, but the fact is in three out of the last 4 years, her highest win percentages have been on clay. But she's in an absolute hole at the moment. You know, she hasn't made it past the quarterfinal this year, and she's made three second round exits. So, you know, and as a result, do you want to take a guess where she is in the live rankings in the live race?
In the live race, I mean, maybe like 25 or something.
She's 27th.
Damn, man. That's crazy. Yeah. Because, like, the live race, I think this year has been so ridiculous on both sides. I think, if I'm not wrong, Jack Draper is maybe number two right now in the men's or something.
I think he might
like
be number
that.
Three.
Number three, right? But also, Yeah, there's so many, like, because Novak is no... I think Arthur Fields is in the top five as well because of his results.
I think so, yeah.
So the race to Turin is super open right now on both sides. Well, I guess the women's don't go to Turin, but, like, the race to the finals is really, really open right now.
But, yeah, she's just had such a... I think that this is... I think you might... She could do something, though, because obviously she's going into this with nothing to lose, and her mentality has to be that this is an opportunity for her to turn around her season. Because, yeah, like Iga, this is, you know, make or break, possibly for her career, legacy, whatever. But for Ken Wynn, I think this is make or break for her season. If she gets an early exit in these three tournaments... It's not going to be looking... It's going to be really hard for her, actually, to get to the WTA finals at the end of the year, which would be a huge drop-off. Yeah, someone who was in the finals of the finals last year, it would be a pretty crazy drop-off.
Because we thought, because she's still very young in both her career and in age, she's a very young tennis player. And, when somebody has a year like her where... It's not like Paolini where she's 27, 28 making slam finals out of nowhere. Like her improvement was seen steady, almost like Sinner's, you know, like, okay, make a slam final. You start making it deep into tournaments, Olympic gold to top off that you're here, make a WTA final to really prove like I belong in the top five best players in the world. And then just to start the year the way she has, like she lost what, second round in Australia, I think, after making the final last year. She's really in a slump, and I hope she can turn it around. I really hope she can turn it around. And I think if we are to mention one more group of people, I have no faith. I mean, we talked a bit about Coco. I don't really have any faith on any of the American ladies to do anything on clay.
No.
Although, props to Jessica Pegula, who we mentioned last time, did win Charleston, is now world number three. So congratulations.
Wow. That's a big deal.
Coco Gauff, number four now. Mm. The number one American player is Jessica Pegula. So
that's kind of crazy. Yeah, a lot of American women in there, but they just whinge the whole time. I feel so. You know, I'm not a big fan of any of them.
No, and it's kind of crazy because like Emma Navarro, I think, is what, world number nine, and she's like USA number five or some shit like that. Like there's so many Americans but in the top 15.
You don't think of any of them as threats, you know. Mind you, the first Grand Slam was won by an American woman this year. And
yeah,
to be
that
honest,
is true. I keep forgetting that.
She's my favorite out of all of them. She's so sweet. I love Madison Keys. She's great. Seems like a great human being. But the other...
Hey, and we're still far from that, but she's going to be like, just as a little foreshadowing, she's going to be like number two, potentially number one to win Wimbledon for me. I'm not even kidding. I think she might win Wimbledon.
Okay,
but let's
I
not
think
talk
that might
that.
Age like milk, but yeah. Let's
see. She retires before she even makes it to Wimbledon.
First round exit in French Open and calls it a day.
She's like, because some fucking asshole bet that I would win Wimbledon, I'm not playing anymore.
Just the pressure gets to her. She's heard about some you know, small podcast made in the Netherlands that, you know, said that she was going to win Wimbledon, and she's cracked under the pressure and just said, I can't play.
Hey, I'm telling you, Calendar Slam is only on for one woman, and that is Madison Keys.
Exactly. It's only you on know? For one person at the end of the Australian Open, and it's her. So no pressure.
So,
I kind of want to see
no
one.
Pressure.
You know? So.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we should have talked about this when we were saying Sinner, but like realistically, he could do it, man.
He could do
he
it.
He could do it this year.
But let's save that for a little bit later when we get into Roland Garros. For me, I think I've covered everything that I want to cover. Do you have anything else that you want to throw out there?
No, I think we did our predictions right. Madrid, we both said Sabalenka. Rome, we both said Iga, I think. Pretty standard picks, I think, compared to the men's, but it just does feel like it's probably between them and maybe Andreeva. And you never know. Mm. There's always some cat that rolls around that you haven't seen in ages pop up with some result. Yeah. Maybe Ching Wen.
Maybe.
Who knows? Hopefully.
Maybe. Well, I guess that is it for us for today. I really hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. And I think we'll be back probably with a Monte Carlo review. And going to be watching some tennis tomorrow. And I hope you guys will be too. And yeah, thank you for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, follow us at CrossCourt Conversations, all our socials, and enjoy the clay season. Get your hands dirty, you filthy animals. Peace.